Today's message is titled Faith for the Impossible. And I don't know if you've ever been in this place of dreaming big, risking it all, taking a chance and stepping out in faith, hoping for more, knowing that there must be more. I had a conversation just last night. I was at a friend's birthday party, and somebody came up to me, and he said, you know, it was a dual birthday party. They were both turning milestones in their lives. My friend was turning 40, and this other guy that I was speaking with had just turned 60. And he said, for 60 years, I've been going one direction, and I just felt like I came to this point where I said, there has got to be more than this. There has got to be more. And he's not a believer, never been, I'll use the buzzword spiritual, has never been any of that in his life. And he got to this point, and I'm not saying that he gave his life over to Christ and it was this huge, I think this is going to be a process of getting to talk to him, but I got to share with him a little bit about our faith, about the church, about what that meant. But he was at that place where God had brought him up to a point and said, there's got to be something more than this, an openness and a readiness to look forward to that. See, there's a trusting that things can be different. And these things, these hopes, these dreams, these risks, these chances, these stepping out, these are all vehicles for change. They're vehicles for something more to happen. And I want to show you, I want to start today with a video. This is a little longer. Normally I try to do, you know, if I'm going to show a clip, it's 30 seconds, 40 seconds. This is about 3 minutes. And I want you to really, I'm going to try my best to get the sound to work on this. So bear with me for a second. This is something new we're doing. I want you to be able to hear this video. This is a guy by the name of Gary Haugen. Anybody know who Gary Haugen is? Gary Haugen is the founder of an organization called the International Justice Mission. The International Justice Mission, you'll see from the clip, I won't do it, you'll pardon, I don't mean the pun, I won't do it justice by trying to explain it here, but this is an organization that fights for the rights of those who can't fight for rights themselves, for children who are in bondage, for those that are in slavery, for those that are being sold into the sex trade, for all of these things. This is his mission. And I want you to kind of hear his heart for this, his passion for this, and then I'm going to give you a little bit of a backstory. This is he is a very humble guy and does not talk very much about how he got into this, but I want you to hear his heart. So this is give me 10 seconds here. This is Gary Haugen from the International Justice Mission.
NBC News in depth tonight, a rare glimpse into a world both horrible and heartbreaking. Here is some of what NBC's Chris Hansen has uncovered in a Dateline NBC investigation.
Poverty is no excuse for forcing children into prostitution, says Gary Haugen, who runs a U.S.-based human rights group, International Justice Mission.
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 At IJM, we do have this confrontation with this horrific phenomenon of evil and violence and injustice in the world, and people who are being horrifically abused, whose lives are on the line, whose basic dignity is being crushed.
Gary Haugen is an American lawyer who has now devoted his career to rescuing children from illegal bondage.
Sometimes you just need to go to the places of need, where people need an advocate, people need someone to bring to bear the law on their behalf.
So if you actually want to eradicate the forced labor system, holding perpetrators accountable is absolutely important.
Our hope is that these victims will feel safe and don't have to worry about the immediate fears that they have. And second thing is that we really want a transformation of their lives despite of the trauma or the experiences that they have gone through in their life.
God knows what their future will be. That's what we're all about. That's the impact that we are having by rescuing children out of those dark, evil places and seeing them mature and grow, be educated, be free.
The most inspiring thing I get to do with my life these days is get to go see my colleagues at work in their own countries around the world. They're the ones who are taking the risks to infiltrate slave rings or sex trafficking operations or violent places where people are being abused. They're the ones that actually work with authorities to bring rescue. My colleagues who end up resurrecting these children who, when we first find them, are just in a fetal position of abuse and then are just resurrected to life and joy and a future. It's an opportunity to do something wonderful, an opportunity to do something that takes risks. It's a struggle that matters.
Isn't that amazing? See, Gary Haugen was a high-priced lawyer for the government. And he, when I first saw this clip that was at one of the summit conferences that we hosted there at the Atlanta Vineyard, and it's my first, it was my first time hearing about Gary Haugen, knowing who he was, and hearing about the International Justice Mission. This was back in 2008, I believe. He said in the interview, this is one time when Bill Hybels was interviewing him. At the time, he was making somewhere around $1.5 million a year, maybe $2 million a year. That was his annual income from his lawyering that he did. And he was a lawyer for the government, for Washington, in Washington, D.C. And he felt this burden, this calling out to him to say, this isn't right. There's something more than this. There's something greater than this out there. These people deserve more. These children who can't speak for themselves. And he let this weight be on his heart to the point that he dreamed of what he could do. He risked it all. He took everything that he had, all of the money that he was making. That's a huge risk to take that and to say, I don't need this, but all these other people do. They need me more than I need what I have here. There's so many others. I had a list here of other people, but I don't think I need to go on to other people. He's enough of this. You'll see this again and again. These amazing people that have had a huge burden placed on their hearts for something that is monumentally bigger than they are, that there's no way they can accomplish by themselves, and yet God calls them out. He calls them to step out, to dream big, to risk everything for the thing that he's calling them to do. The point is this. Sometimes God's going to put on our hearts a burden for something. He's going to put on our hearts a burden for something that is so much bigger than we are. And it'll seem impossible. But we can't shake it. Can't get away from it. Can't hide from it. Can't turn from it. Like Jonah, you get this burden and you try to run, it's just going to follow you. Because God has a special plan. He has a mission that he wants you to be on. Has this ever happened to you? Have you ever been in this place where you felt that burden? That type of a burden? If it hasn't, it will. God has a special, unique plan for each of us. But it's in his timing. It's his timing that decides when those things happen. And I want to speak especially to those of you who have had this burden, this mission, or this dream. You know, it's easy to look at those kind of things and say, this is too big. It's too much. It's way out of my reach. I don't have the skills for it. I don't have the expertise for it. I don't have the training. I don't have the resources. Whatever excuse that we like to make up in our humanness to say, I can't do this. And we table it. And we set it aside. And we kind of push it down. And we say, maybe someday when I'm ready, then I'll be there. The truth is, God's not really in a habit of waiting until we're ready to ask us to do things. That isn't really how I see it working in any book of the Bible. I don't ever see God using people that are completely ready for that. In fact, what I notice a lot is that God tends to use these challenges, these extreme circumstances, to work out those things that we tend to push aside in our lives, those challenges that make us feel like we're not ready. He has a way of letting those bubble up through the challenge, letting us work those things out. Moses was very angry. Moses got angry kind of a lot. Peter had a habit of just saying whatever was on his mind at any random time, and he did that a lot. James and John were hotheads, kind of a lot. God has a way of using people, of calling us out when we're not fully ready. I guarantee Gary Haugen didn't go into this thing saying, okay, I've got everything prepared. Now we're going to go ahead. I think he felt that call. And I remember this interview of him saying, I had no idea how we were going to do this. All I knew is that I had to do it. That's a burden from God. That's faith for the impossible, saying, I don't know how I'm going to do it. All I know is that I have to do it or I'm going to explode. This has to be done. It has to happen, and I'm the one that's going to do it because God has put that burden on our hearts. So we want to dare to dream for the impossible. We want to dare to have faith beyond what we see. You know, Jesus spoke about this. Jesus told him in Mark chapter 11, verse 23, he's talking to his disciples and they're talking about faith. And he says, you see that mountain over there? He said, if you have even a tiny bit of faith, you can tell that mountain, go fall into the sea and it'll obey you. That's faith beyond what might possibly happen. You know, if we're honest, if I'm honest with myself, a lot of times I like my faith to be doable. I like my faith to be things that might happen anyway. And then I'll let that be attributed to God. I don't want to offend anybody, but I know that I do that sometimes. I like my faith to be something I could accomplish probably. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about faith that there is no other way it would happen except by God. That's what inspires us from the Bible. Those stories of faith, those stories of David and Goliath, Moses crossing the Red Sea, these are stories of the impossible. They're not stories that might have happened any other way. They're not stories that just could have possibly happened with circumstance. Only with God did these stories happen, and those are the ones that inspire us. Those are the things that engage us. People like Gary Haugen are the things that inspire us because they had the faith to believe in something that was more, better, and impossible. But Jesus says, by human standards, it's impossible. What with God, all things are possible. And I know I'm taking that a little out of context. But they have faith to see what isn't become what is. So our story for today is about a cupbearer. It's about a person that's essentially a slave. He has no special rights, has no special privileges, is in captivity, is in bondage, and is a servant to the king. And this isn't going to be our typical story. I could have chosen David and Goliath. I could have chosen Moses and the Red Sea. I could have chosen a lot of other things. There's something about this story. The reason that I chose it is it's not just a story of an impossible task. It's a roadmap to its completion. It shows us how to move not just to the moment when God moved, but how to move past the moment where God moves to the fullness of the completion of the task that God has set before us. It's a story of restoration. It's a story of rebuilding. So if you would you turn with me to Nehemiah chapter 2. Nehemiah, if you turn to Ezra, turn past Chronicles. Ezra's really short. And then Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 2. And I want to read this to you, and then I want to come back, and we're going to take it apart a little bit. It says, it was the month of Nisan in the 20th year Artaxerxes was king. He wanted some wine, so I, Nehemiah, took some and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. So the king said, "Why does your face look so sad, even though you're not sick? Your heart must be sad." And I'll give you a little backstory. Nehemiah had heard from the captives that had returned back to Israel, and he had heard from them. They had came back and gave a report and said, they are in a terrible place. They are in shame because the walls have been burned down and the city is in ruin. And he is sad and depressed for a long time. And he comes to the king, and it's the first time he's been sad before the king. And he tells him, or the king says, "Why are you sad? Your heart must be sick." And he says these words, "Then I was very afraid." Isn't that the way it is? "Then I was very afraid. And I said to the king, 'May the king live forever. My face is sad because the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire.' Then the king said to me, 'What do you want?'" And he says, "First I prayed to the God of heaven. Then I answered the king, 'If you are willing and I have pleased you, then send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so I can rebuild it.' The queen was sitting next to the king, and he asked me, 'How long will your trip take? When will you get back?' It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, 'If you're willing to give me letters for the governors of the Trans-Euphrates, tell them to let me pass safely through their lands on my way to Judah. And may I have a letter for Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, telling him to give me timber.'" Presumptuous, isn't he? "I will need it to make boards to build the gates of the palace, which is by the temple, and for the city wall, and for the house that I'm going to live in." So the king gave me all these letters because God was showing kindness to me. And then I went to the governors of the Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. And the king had also sent army officers and soldiers on horses with me." Now let's walk back through that a little bit. The first step in this process of faith for the impossible, of seeing God put a burden on your heart that just burns, that just burns in you to the point that you can't even stand it. The first step is the call that God makes. That God calls us out. The call comes in many forms. Sometimes it's like the call of Samuel, where he hears it but doesn't quite know what he's hearing. Samuel, and Eli. Thanks. And he doesn't recognize it at first. It takes a little bit. Sometimes it's the call of Moses where a bush is on fire and not burning, and that's a pretty obvious one. He didn't miss that. Sometimes it's like Gary Haugen. You have no idea. You know the calls from God. You have no idea what's going to happen, how you're going to do it. And sometimes it's like Nehemiah, where you have no chance that this is going to work aside from God. We're talking about the nation that brought them to ruins and destruction, now sending them back to rebuild. Does that make any sense in any logical way? None at all. It makes no sense. The fact that he even asked for it is amazing to me. That took guts to even ask. But a call always brings the same thing. If that call is from God, it always is going to bring a burden to your heart. It's going to bring a desire to see change. Sometimes it'll bring a great sadness to you, like it did to Nehemiah, like it did to Gary Haugen. Sometimes it'll bring a burning of passion towards something, an urging, an urgency in your spirit. Have you ever felt that? Have you ever been in that place where you feel that just that pull that's so strong? The desire to see what isn't become what is. Peter felt this way. When Peter, standing on the edge of the boat, out in the sea, and God calls him, he had to take the courage to step out. We'll talk about that in a minute. What about the beggar at the beautiful gate? Peter goes up to the beggar and he says, this is the man who's been crippled for his whole life. And he comes up to him and he says, I don't have any silver or gold, but what I have, I give to you. He looks at him and he says, God's calling me. This is passion. You've been there. I'm sure you're praying for somebody and God puts on your heart, I have to say this to this person. God is doing something right now, right there in that person's life. And I am the only one that happens to be here in this moment, and God is saying, go, you, right now. Go and say this. And that's the time. He probably walked by this guy every day, but today was different. God put that calling on him, and Peter had the choice to have to step out, and he had to have faith for the impossibility of what he was getting ready to say. Huge risk. The beauty in these kind of things is that the more impossible the task is, the more opportunity for risk, the more chance for failure, the greater the glory that God has. Because at some point, if God has called you to do the impossible, then guess what? He's going to step in and he's going to make a way for it to happen. But I don't want to get too ahead of myself because there's something in between the call and when God makes the way. There's two places it says this in Nehemiah. One of them I read and one of them I didn't. If you step back, and you look at verse 11 from chapter 1. This is after Nehemiah recognizes how much trouble they've gotten into, the Israelites, by not following God's laws, why they're here. And he says in verse 11, Lord, listen carefully to the prayer of your servant and the prayers of your servants who love to honor you. Give me your servant success today. Allow this king to show kindness to me. And then he does it again in verse 4, the second half of it. And the king asks him, he says, first I prayed to the God of heaven. This step in between these two things is called the confirmation. It's confirming that God is really, that this is really God. It's called waiting before you move forward to make sure that you're hearing right. A guy that I really admire who speaks quite a bit at different Vineyard conferences used to be the head of the National Vineyard up in Canada. A guy by the name of Gary Best. I've seen him speak at several conferences, and he says the same thing at every conference, and I love it. It always sticks in my mind. He says, you know, sometimes I have a really hard time telling whether or not it's God or if it's pizza. And what he means is that sometimes we're a little bit like Samuel. We hear this voice that says, you should go do this, and we think, well, is that God? It sounds awfully crazy. So maybe it's just my own mind making stuff up, and we need to confirm that. That's true. Right? It's very hard sometimes to hear. We don't often get these Moses burning bush moments. We get these little voices that sound a lot like us in the back of our minds that sort of say something that you think sounds so far out there that you say, oh, that's impossible. And it's easy to disregard that. We don't want to disregard it. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we want to double check. We want to ask for confirmation. We want to seek God in these things. We want to seek the Lord. We want to ask for his blessing, his favor, to show us ways that we know this is God. This is what he's doing, because we don't want to step out on faith and sink to the bottom of the ocean because we heard God wrong. I mean, what if Moses Now, I don't know the answers to these questions. These are all just hypothetical questions. But what if Moses had just marched the Israelites straight into the Red Sea and said, God will probably part those waters? Do you remember that crucial step that Moses did before they crossed the Red Sea? You remember they just stood there? And he tells them, just stand here and wait. What's he waiting for? He's waiting for God to confirm that this is what they're supposed to do. He's waiting to make sure that he's doing this right before he moves forward. I'm not saying God wouldn't have parted the Red Sea. I don't know. I don't know the answers to this, and I'm not presuming to say what God would or wouldn't have done. I'm just saying that isn't how it played out. There's a step in there where we need to wait and be silent and be still and pray to God and ask others to pray for God for us. You notice in that verse that he doesn't just say it. Let me read this exactly. He doesn't just say, listen carefully to the prayer of your servant. He said, listen carefully to the prayer of your servant and to the prayers of your servants who love to honor you. He asked others to be praying for him too. They're praying together for this thing. So step one is to confirm your calling. Nehemiah saw Artaxerxes' question of, what do you want? As a confirmation. But before he proceeds, it still says the very next thing he did was pray. But step two, when you know that that's from God, when you know God's telling you to do something that sounds crazy, that sounds impossible, dare to ask. Dare to step out of the boat. Dare to step between the walls of the water. Dare to walk up to the giant with nothing in your hand but a slingshot. It's going to be scary. And it's going to feel, to your natural mind, insane. Because God likes to work that way. I don't mean God's insane. I mean, God likes to call us to do things that are so far out of the purview of what might possibly happen that it challenges us to our very core of who we are as people. And we can't see anything else but to say, God, move. God, you've got to do this because I can't do it by myself. So Nehemiah dares. He dares to ask. I want you to listen to these words in verse 5. In verse 5, he says, first I prayed, then I answered the king. The king had just said, what do you want? And he says, if you're willing, and if I've pleased you, then send me to the city where my ancestors are buried. And notice he never says, okay, go ahead and go. All it says is that the king answered, well, how long is that trip going to take? And when will you get back? You notice the presumption he's already going? The king already decided. And then I love this part, if we go a little bit further, he says, if you're willing. Now, this is the crazy part. He already just asked him if he could go, but he doesn't stop there. He says, if God's in this, I'm going for it. He says, if you're willing, why don't you give me some letters that'll let me pass? And if you're also willing, can I also have some letters to have a whole bunch of timber to rebuild the city and rebuild the walls and make a house for myself? Notice he's not planning on staying there for a week. These are huge requests. These are a big deal. I mean, he had some guts to ask this of the king. And then comes the great part. Then comes the third step. So we have the call. We have the confirmation. And then we have my favorite part. The part where God makes a way. We see it several different times. We see it in verse 4 when he says, what do you want? We see it in verse 6 when he says, how long is your trip going to take and when are you going to get back? And then we really see it in the second half of verse 8 where he says the king actually gave him the letters. And then did you catch it at the very end? God loves to do this. He always loves to do something that's beyond what we asked for, beyond what we think. Because remember, God knows what we need before we even ask for it. You know, we have a habit of asking for what we want or what we think we might need, but God really knows what we need. Did you notice at the end that the king gave him something he didn't ask for? Read the last half of verse 9. The king had also sent an army officers with me and soldiers on horses. That was pretty huge. That was pretty huge for him to send, a group of army officers and horses along with him, not just to send him on his own with a contingent of people, but to send him with these others as well to protect him. These are these moments, these inexplicable moments of the impossible becoming a reality, of you seeing it unfold before your eyes. Moments that have to be God. They must be God because there's no way it would work any other way. These are the moments that that encourage you. These are the moments that I say it. I've said this to you lots of times. These are the moments you got to journal. You need to write these down. Make a list of these moments in your life, of these things where God is doing things and moving, because these are going to be encouraging to you down the road when you feel those periods of dryness, when you're in this mission and you're past where God has made this way and now you're in this challenging place. We're going to talk about that a little next week, what it looks like down the road from God making these impossible ways. When you're in those moments, to look back and be able to say, yeah, this is really hard, but don't you remember that God showed the kindness to us? Don't you remember how much God was in this? And it just bolsters you up again to remember the goodness of God, to remember the amazing majesty of God. It just bolsters you to say, I can keep going with this. It's easy for us to forget those things and get mired down in the circumstances of what we're trying to do. If you'll write them down, you won't forget. I really would encourage you to do that. But these are those moments that are faith growing, encouraging, exciting, unbelievable. And I know throughout this process of planting the church, we've had lots of these moments, lots of these God moments that have led us from where we started to where we are today. And I know we're still in the middle of this process, that we haven't finished this to completion yet and probably won't for ever. Because I think you always just kind of keep planting, right? Yeah. But I want to tell you about one story that happened recently. This is I hope this encourages you as much as it encouraged me. We've been working out some additional details of our lease here on the space. And one of the things that came up in the lease were all of these provisions that were sort of like open-ended costs, open-ended fees and things that would just be assessed at some later date. We didn't need to know what they were now. They'll just be assessed later. And I understand that that's language that was in there. He didn't put it in there to be mean-spirited or anything. It's just the language that's in the lease. And we said, look, we don't have provision for just random allocations of money later in the future. We need to have this stuff spelled out. What is this cost going to be? And it was things like sharing in the cost of the insurance of the space. It was things like sharing in the cost of the comps around here to do things like lawn care and maintenance. It was sharing in, there were several other things, all of these provisions for what might come up in the future. And they were going to be, it was basically going to double our rent in fees per month. It would have doubled. That's a lot for us, doubled our rent. And so I called him. I prayed about this a lot. My first reaction is always, oh no, what are we going to do? I don't know why that's always my first reaction. I'm always reminded of that psalm that says, why do the nations rage? Why do I even bother? If God's in this, why do I even bother with it? Here's me, and I'm worried, and I think, what are we going to do with this? And I'm praying, and Amy says, just call him. Call the landlord and tell him. So I did. And I thought he would probably, I had this all prepared. We had points, Paul and I had points lined out of what we were going to say of, okay, well, if he says this, then we'll come back with this. And if he says this, we'll come back for this. And the last one, if we have to choose it, then we'll come back with this one. I didn't really have any provisions for what was going to happen with what he said. Because he didn't say, well, we'll defer them for a year, or we'll allocate them a little time each month. We'll defer the payments a little bit like this, or we'll ask you to pay one but not the other. Instead, what he says is, well, let's just forget those then. And he did. And he just said, we'll just mark them off, and you don't need to pay those things for the whole term of the lease. Isn't that ridiculous and amazing? I didn't even have that option worked out. I wasn't even going to ask. Can we just not pay them? And I didn't ask. All I did was say what I just told you all is we don't have the resources to have our rent doubled with this. What are our options? And he said, just forget about it then. God is in the business of doing the impossible. And he's in the business of using people in all places for the furthering of his kingdom. And if we simply will have the guts, for lack of a better word, to ask. I didn't even ask. God just did it. It's like this provision for Nehemiah. They just gave him the extra things. If we'll just step out, if we'll just step out on faith, God will move. God will keep moving. This whole process has been that way. You know, when we started this and we felt the call, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but when we, Amy and I got to speak at the regional convention for the Vineyard Churches here in the Southeast region, this last convention that they had, and they asked Amy and I and another group of church planners to come up and speak a little bit about the process because, you know, we were just being released. And he asked how we knew that we were going to be called to do this. And I said, you know, I wish it had been one of those Moses burning bush moments where I thought, oh, you know, everything's glowing. And I say, oh, it's God calling us to plant a church. And it's going, he tells us exactly what it's going to look like. Yeah, it was more of the Samuel saying, I'm not sure if that's you, God. I didn't have provision for this. I don't. When God called us to this, we thought, man, this is so much bigger than where we are, than who we are, than what we can do. I don't know how we're going to do this. And then just slowly, God starts to work. We spent a long time with confirmation. We spent a long time praying, seeking God. I filled up an entire journal of things waiting for just confirmation. I needed a lot of confirmation. And I just, day after day, we would seek God, we would fast, we would pray. Day after day, we would call others and say, what are you hearing? What did you hear about this? And keep a record of these things. We had meetings where we had what called a clearness committee, just to make sure we're hearing clearly from what God's saying, and this is being confirmed by more than one source. And then we decided to step forward. And God started to make a way, started to draw people, started to open up opportunities, starting to make things happen. It was amazing. It still is amazing. And this process hasn't continued because the cool thing is that when God steps in and when God makes a way, all bets are off. You know, what's going to happen? We don't know. Anything might happen. God might part the waters. God might slay the giant. Anything can happen when God steps in. We don't have any kind of frame of reference for what God's going to do. We know what might happen in our own lives, but we don't have any of that. I had no idea this guy, this landlord, was going to say, oh, just forget it then. I hadn't even come up with that plan. That was like plan Z. I didn't have that on my radar. Anything can happen, and it's such an exciting time. We kind of want to just live in that moment of God, more impossible thing. Just want to live in that place of God doing the impossible. It's so wonderful to do. But the truth is that these moments, these God-ordained moments where he steps in, these moments open doors. They create paths. They make a way for us to move forward. They make a way for Moses to cross the sea, for Peter to be able to preach revival after healing the crippled man, for Nehemiah to rebuild the city walls after asking for this daring, daring thing, this huge question from the king. God's movement, I really want you to hear me on this. This is an important point, I think. God's movement is meant to be a catalyst. God's movement is a catalyst that is meant to launch us into the rest of the call that He has for us. This isn't the ending point. It's not the stopping point when God moves. When they crossed the point for Moses, wasn't cross the Red Sea. It was cross the Red Sea to get to the promised land, but they needed to see God is in this in a big way because He was calling them to a big thing. And the bigger the challenge, the bigger the impossibility, the more we need to see that God is in this in an enormous way so that we have the faith to walk through the desert for 40 years. Because we know that God has said He's going to do it, and He showed that He was going to do it, not just said it. God's movement in these things is a catalyst. It launches us forward because it builds and encourages us in a way that we can say, God, I know that You're in this. Let's keep moving. These are God paving the way. God making a way. So what do we do now? How do we move forward? I debated whether or not I wanted to keep going from this point or if this would be a good stopping point. You guys have 11 more minutes in you, right? Because I think this is a really crucial point, and I can wait till next week to tell you this, but I think I want to tell you this week. The next point is how we move forward. We're called. We're confirmed. God makes the way. Then we have to do. We have to do what Nehemiah does. I want to read to you from verse 11 in chapter 2. Nehemiah says, I went to Jerusalem and I stayed there for 3 days. And then at night, I started out with a few men. I didn't tell anyone what God had caused me to do for Jerusalem. There were no animals with me except for the one I was riding. I went out at night through the valley gate, and I rode toward the dragon well and the trash gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem that had been broken down and the gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I rode on toward the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was not enough room even for the animal I was riding to pass through because of the rubble. So I went up to the valley at night, inspecting the walls. Finally, I turned, went back in through the valley gate. The guards didn't know where I had gone or what I was doing. I had not yet said anything to the Jewish people, the priests, or the important men, the officers, or any of the others who would do the work. But then I said to them, you can see the trouble we have here. Jerusalem is a pile of ruins. Its gates have been burned. So come, let's rebuild the wall so we won't be full of shame any longer. And I told them all of the goodness and kindness that God had showed to me and what the king had said to me. The next step after God has made the way is we need to make a survey or an inspection of what to do next, of where God is saying to go specifically, of how it's going to look to move forward. Because despite how much we want to live in that moment where God does these things, God's continuing to work, but it may not be in that big, obvious way that we say this is God. Instead, there's going to be some real practical aspects. When Gary Haugen was preaching or talking about this at that conference, there's some real practical things that he had to do to make this happen. He had to put together a team. He had to figure out how they were going to get the resources, how they were going to get access into these countries. He had to find people to go undercover. He had to figure out how to get around organizations, past police, through mob, through armies, through armed soldiers to get to these people. There's going to be some practical things that we have to do, and you don't just march into a foreign country, walk in there and say, I'm here to make things right. You have to prepare. And that's what Nehemiah did. This survey was a chance to see what needed to be done. It was a chance for him to size up the task. And I want you to call your attention to a really important thing for this. Is that Nehemiah had already committed to the task. He'd already committed himself to this thing before he knew how big it was going to be. Do you notice he committed to it and then went and sized up what he had to do? There's a really important principle in this. We'll say important principle number two. If you size up the task that you have to do before you do it, you won't do it. What I mean is this. If you look at that task before you agree to God, before you wait for the confirmation, if you use the size and the practicality and all the impossibility of the task to be a gauge as to whether or not you're going to move forward with what God is calling you to do, you probably won't move forward with what God is calling you to do. We have to say yes and then jump off the ledge. We have to say yes and then survey the land. We have to say yes and then come up to the Red Sea. David said yes before he went out to see the giant. Moses said yes before he had any idea what he was getting himself into. The disciples said yes before they knew what it was going to cost them. And we have to say yes for what God is calling us to do without having full knowledge of what that's going to entail. Nehemiah waited to tell everybody else, and we spent a long time before we moved into this space, before we decided that this, we knew God was calling us to plant a church. We didn't know where. And I don't want to put myself up on a pedestal here. I've made plenty of silly mistakes and things that I've not been one to just stand up on faith and do all of these things in different moments. But we had to agree to say yes to God before we knew what this was going to look like. When we said yes to God, we lived in a 1,800 square foot townhome with no place to meet and didn't know who else was going to be with us that had a house to meet in. We didn't have a place to meet. When we said yes to God, we didn't have an idea how this was going to look for our family. We knew we were pregnant with our youngest child. We knew life was getting ready to be crazy. And we knew that everybody that kept telling me again and again and again, this is the wrong time, this makes no sense to try to do this right now. And I'm not talking about the people we were asking to pray for. I'm just talking about family or friends that aren't in the faith that might say, they would say, you're getting ready to have a baby. You're trying to sell your house. Are you sure this is the right time to do this? But when God puts that burden on your heart, when God weighs something on you that you know you can't wait any longer, the means don't really matter. All that matters is that God has called you to do it. And if God has called you to do it, he's going to make a way. I said this quote once before. I'll say it again. This is my grandfather. He said, if God is in this, there is nothing you can do to stop it. And if God's not in this, nothing you can do is going to make it happen. But there's something else to that. You have to say yes. You have to step out. I'm not finished with the sermon, but I'm going to stop there today, and I'm going to pick this up next week from that place of inspection. Can we just, I'll ask you, wherever you are, just as I'm talking, I feel like God is really calling up in us different things that maybe we've tabled, different things that maybe God has said, I'm calling you to do this, and we've said, it's bigger than me. I don't see how I could do this, and sort of just put it aside because it seemed too big. And I want to say that God is saying to you now, Don't wait until you feel like you're ready to do this. Don't wait until you feel like everything's in the perfect place. Say yes. I do want to tell you my ending quote, and then we're going to pray. I watched a movie this week. If I can find it. I watched a movie this week. It was about a relationship. It's the classic star-crossed lovers story. It wasn't Romeo and Juliet. But it was about a girl who was deaf and a man who was not. And he fell in love with her and wanted to be with her and to spend his life with her. And everybody told him how hard this was going to be. He didn't speak sign language, didn't know sign language, didn't know how to communicate. Totally different worlds. He said how hard this was going to be. And he said this quote, and he said it several times, and it stuck with me because it's so perfect for this, what we're talking about. He said, I'm not going to miss out on something great just because it might also be hard. I'm not going to miss out on something great just because it might also be hard. The Bible says it this way. In 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 20, it says, be strong and courageous. Get to work. The Lord will be with you. He'll see to it that everything is finished. Don't worry. He won't leave you. Don't be frightened by the size of the task. It's from 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 20. And David's talking to Solomon. He's telling him about the impossibility of building the temple for God. He says, basically, this is going to seem overwhelming. It's going to be hard. Don't be consumed by the size of it. We don't want to miss out on something that could be great just because it might also be hard. So would you just, we're going to take a moment and we're just going to ask God to kind of open up those places in our hearts. Would you just, wherever you are, just close your eyes, if you don't mind, and bow your heads, and let's pray.